Hello and welcome to OU's Nach Yomi. You can find this year posted at ouradio.org/nach or on my website, ericlevy.com, under the recording section. This is Rabbi Eric Levy, and I am pleased to bring to you Tehillim Lamed Aleph, Psalm 31. The inscription of this psalm begins, Lamnatzeach Mizmor LeDavid, which I'll translate as, for the maestro, a song by David. I hope you don't mind me having fun with the translation of menatzeach. It could mean conductor, choir leader, etc. But I think maestro has a certain mastery to it, as the word natzeach or netzach applies. The lamed of Le David is almost certainly by David, indicating authorship, rather than to, meaning that it was written for him. Since this is the first tehillah I am teaching for OU's Nach Yomi, I need to preface the study of this particular psalm with a few general principles that apply to the studies of Tehillim in general. First, we really need to focus on the very fluid tenses, past, future, and present tense. As we will see very often when the Meshorer speaks in past tense, he may not mean something that has already happened, but something that he is sure will happen in the future. Or as the Radak often says, the medieval commentator often says, Avar bimakom atid. A clear example of this is in our Psalm number 6, Tilah Vav, which we say during Tachanun, where the Meshorer, where the psalmist says, Shama Adonai Tchinati Adonai Tefilati Yikach. Simply translated, the first half is in the past tense. The Lord has heard my plea. But it can't be that simple, since the second half of the sentence asks for the same thing, but in the future. The Lord, he will, or let him, accept my prayers. It could mean that since God has heard me in the past, he will accept my prayers in the future, but this is not really the sense here in Tehillah Vav, nor is it the sense in most cases, or in our Tehillah 31 that we are learning today. One of my students correctly calls this past tense the confidence tense. That is to say that the one who prays is so sure that God will listen or that God will do or that God will save that it is phrased in the past tense. In modern English, you might say something like, consider it done, meaning that you will surely do it in the future. This shift from past to future and back again also gives the sense of eternality. God is always with us. He always has been. He always will be. And this actually creates a very emphatic present tense, which is how the JPS translation reads this verse. The Lord heeds my plea. The Lord accepts my prayer. Now, getting back to our Tehillah, Lamed Aleph, this spanning of all times, past, present, and future, exists in the very first verse of our poem. Another principle, by the way, is that the inscription, in this case, Lamnatzeach Mizmor LeDavid, it may be the first verse in the perek, but it is not the first line of poem. The first line of poetry follows the inscription. It's not the inscription itself. Anyway, getting back to the first line of the poem itself, Becha Adonai Chasiti Al Evosha Leolam Betzidkatecha Faleteini. In you, God, I have trusted, past tense, I will not, or perhaps may I never be shamed in the future. Rescue me in that you are righteous, i.e. because in all righteousness I deserve, the singer says, David says, I deserve to be rescued. This last part is in the command form, faleteini, rescue me. And the sense is do it now in the present. So we have all tenses really covered in the first line of the poem. The sense really is in an eternal present. I'm in trouble, but I put my trust in you as always, so don't allow me now or ever to be shamed, but rather rescue me. This brings us to the second principle of learning Tehillim, which is that the troubles that the Meshorer is speaking about are often not specified clearly. That is, in Tehillim, when he thanks God, sometimes we don't know exactly what he's thanking God for. When he's complaining that he needs help or salvation from trouble X, we often don't know exactly what trouble X is. Now, sometimes the inscriptions give a clue. For instance, in Tehillah Samach, Psalm 60, it reads, Lamnatzeach al Shushan Edut Nechtam LeDavid Lilamed, Bahat Soto et Aram Naharayim, Bet Aram Tsova, Vayashov Yoav, Vayachet Edom, Begay Melach, Shneim Asar Aleph. So we'll get to this Tehillah Samach in about 30 days, so I'm not going to translate the whole inscription right now, but suffice it to say that besides describing on what instrument or what musical meter it should be played, it tells us that it's dedicated to a specific incident that took place in Edom around the Dead Sea area during David's Aramite Wars. However, in our Tehillah, Lamed Aleph, in our Psalm 31, no such historical information is given. Moreover, while Tehillah Samach, Psalm 60, refers to an incident which is at least partially mentioned in the historical books of Tanakh, there's no reason to assume that other Psalms must be referring to some incidences recorded in Tanakh. A lot of stuff that happens in biblical times is not mentioned in Tanakh, such as what happened during the first 74 years of Abraham's life. We only meet him when he's 75 years old. And in fact, Chazal takes Psalm 80, our rabbis take Psalm 8, Tehillah Chet, and according to some, say it may be referring to these very years as Avram lied on his back and looked up at the stars and discovered the first principles of God's omnipresence and omnipotence and what man's role is in that whole religious schema. So just because when we take any given Tehillah, just like our Tehillah 31, and it's referring to an incident, it may be referring to something that was listed in our Tanakh, but it may not be referring to something that happened in our Tanakh, but some other event. There's another complication, which is when we're reading the Tehillim, it's hard to pinpoint the historical event because what's described in the Tehillah may be literal or it may be figurative. So as we go to the next line of our psalm, in verse 3, it reads, Hate Eli Oznecha, Mehira Hatzileni. Turn your ear to me quickly, save me. The Meshorer begs or petitions God. Now, we know this imagery is figurative. God does not literally have an ear that he could turn towards the listener. Rather, the sense is that the psalmist is calling out to God, and in fact, he has been for some time, and he hopes that God will simply listen to him. However, as the poem continues, Heyei li litzur ma'oz leveit mitzudot lehoshieni, be to me a stronghold, be a citadel to save me. The question is this also metaphoric, or is the imagery more literal? Perhaps David is under siege, either in Yerushalayim or maybe during one of his wars. And he calls to God to be a fort. And the question is, are his calls to God to be a fortress, are they metaphoric calls that God should be like a fortress or support him as if he was a fortress? Or does he mean that his very real fortress should be supported by God? Note that in verse 22, David says, Blessed is God, and I'll get back to the Hebrew later when we get to that verse, but he says, Blessed is God because he set aside his loving kindness for me in the city under siege. And that sounds like a real city. But on the other hand, it may just be that God should be like a city, that God has made David like a city that withstands a siege. So as we're reading the poetry, it's hard to know for sure whether, because we don't know always whether it's literal or figurative or both, it's hard to say that it specifies a specific event. Amos Chacham, who writes the Dat Mikra commentary to Psalms, a beautiful, beautiful commentary in Hebrew, in modern Hebrew, points out that this very elusiveness, A-L-L, elusiveness of Tehillim, that is, its very vagueness is important because that allows the Tehillim to be eternal. It allows the Tehillim to apply to many situations and many ages. If it's not elusive and vague, then the Tehillah, the prayer, becomes very, very limited. I'll give a mundane example. If the Beatles sang, Help, I need somebody, help, not just anybody, help, you know, I need someone, specifically a doctor to handle this infected hangnail, help. Well, that would be a really good song if you had an infected hangnail, but it would not have a universal impact that the song obviously does. And to be more serious, a little more serious about it, even had the desire for help been something more serious than a hangnail, specifying a particular and narrow problem would necessarily limit its audience. But a lot of people can relate to the Beatles when they say, and now my life has changed in oh so many ways, my independence seemed to vanish in the haze. Well, that can mean something, a lot of things to different people. They can insert themselves into the problems of those very general references. Now, that doesn't mean that the author, whether it's John Lennon or, in our case, Lahavdil, King David, wasn't responding with prayer and song to a very specific problem. No doubt he had a very specific problem in mind. And in fact, the Radak understands this Tehillah as a reference to the Ziphim siding with King Shaul in pursuit of David. But by using more generic phrases and allusions and metaphors, the prayer encompasses a nearly limitless audience, giving it a nearly limitless time and locale where one can say it and have it have meaning and power. This notwithstanding, by looking at the actual poetry, we can see an emphasis on certain themes within a specific psalm, based on repeated words and stressed ideas and repeated images. Here, I think we will see that the enemies who are cited here are essentially liars. They stir up the pot against those who are honest. The humbleness of the honest servant is pitted against the egotism and haughtiness of those who say what they want, when they want, to make things go their way. Because of the many images involving cities and fortresses, it does remind me of the story in Sefer Melachim, the Book of Kings, where Jerusalem is surrounded by the enemy, and the enemy uses the traitor Rav Shakeh, in this case Ashur, King Sancheyriv, uses the traitor Rav Shakeh to bring psychological warfare against Yerushalayim, trying to convince the people in Jerusalem that their king Chizkiyahu, Hezekiah, has been rejected by God and is leading them into a false war. Now, whether or not any such incident is mentioned in the Torah about David, there's no doubt that in David's storied career as conqueror and a king, something this may have indeed happened, where a city, either Jerusalem or another city he was protecting, was put under the psychological seed, and the enemies are actually real enemies who are attacking the city. But it really does not pay to pin things down too closely. Otherwise, we really do limit the universality of the prayer. The idea that there are those who lie and deceive and act with haughtiness to turn the table against a person who is honest and truthful, that is a more universal idea to which the prayer lends itself. And then one can insert whatever specific situation really fits those parameters. Now, back to our actual prayer. Ki sal'i umtsudati ata ulaman shimcha tancheini utnahaleini. The first half of this poetic line continues the fortress imagery from the last line. Indeed, you are my rock and my fortress. Ki can mean because, or it can mean when, or it can be used as an emphatic, indeed. And I think the latter one reads the best here. Indeed, you are my rock and my fortress. The second half of the line moves towards actually a shepherd imagery, which is very familiar from Psalm 23, Tehillah Chaf Gimel, which we sing on Shabbat, as Shabbat is waning. Even when I walk through the valley of darkness, I will fear no evil, etc., etc., etc. The psalm, our psalm, reads, For the sake of your name, give me rest and guide me. Tancheni means rest, but the sense is guide me to a peaceful situation. I should note that the phrase, for your name, Ulaman Shimcha, is a basic principle in our religious thought, stemming back to Moshe Rabbeinu, to Moses, or even back to Abraham's argument with God over the city of stone. Save me for your name, since if your followers fall, it creates a Chilul Hashem. If the righteous do not get treated righteously, then essentially it works against you, God. This is a provocative and even an audacious argument to say that you better save me because if you don't, you look bad. But if we didn't know that that very argument was made by Abraham and Moshe against God, I think we would be unable to make such a complaint against the creator of the universe. Nonetheless, we can follow our great father's forefathers. We then continue with the shepherd imagery in the next line and then ultimately shift back to the fortress imagery. Totsieni mi reshet zu tamnu li ki ata ma'uzi. Free me from this trap, literally a net, that they have laid for me because you are my stronghold. So we begin the petition with the request that God be a ma'oz, a stronghold, a confirmation that God, and then end with a confirmation that God is my stronghold. Ki ata ma'uzi. Now, while there's a nice balance of images, we start with the fortress, we move to shepherd, then we repeat shepherd, and then we move back to fortress in these two lines. The images are really not really related. One has a very pastoral setting, and the other one a very urban setting. All I could say is that the psalm, our Tehillah 31, seems to borrow phrases and images from a lot of other Tehillim, Tehillim that are calls to God for from our troubles. So actually, it's the truth is further than that. It really pulls from a lot of different tehillim of all types. In some ways, our tehillim lamed aleph is kind of like a medley or a best of. And that shouldn't shock anybody. Remember that David himself borrows part of his tehillim, which we say in Hallel, Psalm 113. Mikimi me'afar dal me'ashbot yarim evyon. He wasn't the first one to say that. Chana in Sefer Shmuel, in the first two prakim, in the second parak of the book of Samuel, uses those very lines. So he borrows them and then changes them a little bit to fit his particular need. Remember that imitation is the best form of flattery. And what I'll do is I'll note during the many times when the phrases in our Tehillim Lamed Aleph seem to be borrowed from other Tehillim. Up until now, in our Tehillah, in our Psalm, David has been praying that God be his rock and his shepherd, e.g. that God save him from an unspecified trouble. Now we come to the author stating his reliability and his faithfulness, especially in contrast with the as yet unnamed enemies. And this idea of the conflict between emet and emunah, truth and faithfulness, reliability and tzedek and chasid, is really pitted against, and those words are repeated over and over, are pitted against another set of words which are repeated over and over. Shav and Diba, which are falsehoods, and Zamam, which are plotters, and Sheker and Gava and haughtiness. And that's really the contrast as our Tehillah kind of switches back and forth between these two antagonists. Biyadcha afki ruchi padita oti Adonai el emet. I entrust my spirit in your hands, or I will entrust my spirit in your hands. You redeem me. Note, padita is past tense, but it really means confidence in the future, as I mentioned, and in the now, that you will redeem me, or you're going to redeem me now, Lord, the God of truth. And there's that first idea of emet, that God is truthful. And by affirming what God is all about, i.e. truth, that is always doing the right thing, the just thing, the implication is God must do the right thing, which is how we started. But tzidkatcha, in your righteousness, you must do the right thing and save me. Why? Because saneti hashomrim havle shav vani El Adonai Batachti. I have hated, always hated, and I hate those who guard or rely on empty lies. But me, in contrast, I trust in the Lord. Commentators understand this as an affirmation of a person who follows Torah and mitzvot versus one who doesn't, or one who hashomrim havle shav, either they don't follow the Torah or they actually follow avodah zarah. But I think the sense is more generally those who invent things, who invent words to satisfy their own goals, and as opposed to v'ani, me, who holds to the truth and trusts in God even when the truth is unpopular and risky. And we will see that the phrase v'ani, but me, or in contrast me, is used three times in this Tehillah and helps to identify the structure of the prayer. Agila v'esmecha b'chasdecha, I rejoice and I'm happy in your chesed. Now chesed here it recurs over and over in this prayer as an attribute of God and as people who serve God. And above, when I mentioned verse 22, I refer to it as loving kindness, which is a classic translation of chesed. But here the sense is that God does the right thing. Chesed, God does chesed, God does the right thing. God is faithful to what he promises. Note that chesed and emet in the Torah are often a team, chesed v'emet, almost one idea rather than separated ones. So while chesed is loving kindness, it really means here in many places, as well as many places, doing the right thing, doing what you know to be right. And while I will be happy, and now getting back to the Tehillah, while I will be happy in the future because I am confident that asher ra'ita et onyi yadata b'tzarot nafshi, you see my suffering, you know my soul's distress. So agilav esmecha b'chasdecha, why? Because asher ra'ita et onyi yadata b'tzarot nafshi. Again, not so much in the past tense, but what I'm confident about in the future. Obviously, things are not resolved, or he wouldn't be praying if all the troubles were already resolved, and he was sure that God was paying attention, he wouldn't bother be praying in the first place. V'lo hizgartani b'yad oyev hemadita b'ma Bamerchav Raglai. You won't turn me into the enemy's hands or turn me over into the enemy's hands, but rather you will stand by me. You will stand me, or literally my legs, in a broad place, i.e., you will make me stand strong. Now, why do I translate these verbs in the future tense, even though they're suffix forms meaning the past? Maybe he's saying, listen, you did not give me over to the enemy up to this point, and you stood me up to this point in a broad place, i.e. you gave me a good place to stand. I'm going with that because otherwise this would be a thanksgiving for services rendered by God and not a prayer for the existing very real and very imminent dangers as indicated in the very next line. The confidence cannot eradicate the very real trouble and suffering. Choneni Adonai kitzar li, ashesha b'chaseini nafshi uvitni. Lord, have mercy on me because I'm in distress from my sorrow, or maybe vexation or frustration. I don't think that chas really means anger. That's not what he is feeling here. He's feeling more vexation or sorrow. From my sorrow, my eyes are wasted, as is my throat and my guts. This is from the crying and the frustration from these troubles. Chaneni Adonai kitzar li. Now, it could mean the word mikas, ashesha bikas eini. It could mean that I am crying or I am wasting away because of other people's anger against me, which is how the Radak explains it. But either way, it works out okay. Note that this phrase, ashesha bikas eini, is very similar to Tehillim Vav, which is our Tachnun. And these troubles have taken a toll, a terrible toll on our psalmist. Ki chalu biagon chayai ushnotai ba'anacha kashal ba'avoni chochi va'atzamai asheshu. Indeed, the life, there is the word ki, indeed, my life is spent by the sorrow, spent as in used up. My years are spent in groans. My strength has failed because or due to my sin. My bones are wasted. Kashal b'amani chochi v'atzamai asheshu. The psalmist is saying, I am almost done. There's not much time left to save me. And that's what he's telling God. Now, the difficult part of this last line was the word avoni. Because up to now, and for the rest of the tehillah as well, there really has been no talk of sin whatsoever. Some tehillim say, listen, I sinned. We'll see that tomorrow for Tehillah Lamed Bet. But in fact, the psalmist, our David HaMelech, is pretty much asserting that he's been honest and faithful and God should respond in kind. So why is he now saying, because of my sin, I am failing? So Radak is bothered by this and says that it's like someone who, when bad things happen to them, even though he doesn't remember doing anything bad, he says, well, it must be because I sinned. So David may be referring to some vague sin that he doesn't really know for sure. But he figures since he's being treated badly, God must be paying attention to some sin he's not aware of. That's the Radak. I would like to say that avoni could actually mean punishment sometimes rather than sin. Gadol avoni means so. When Kayan says that my avon is too great to bear, there's a big dispute between Rashi and Ebenezer about whether that means my sin is too great to forgive, and therefore I understand why you're punishing me, or the punishment you've given me, which is to wander and ultimately to be killed, is too harsh for me. It's not fair. So avoni can mean punishment as opposed to sin. So maybe he's saying that I'm failing because of the punishment which is on me without necessarily admitting to any kind of sin, especially in light of the fact that the rest of the tehillah, there's no recollection of sin, and there's a recollection of the opposite, of great faith and reliability and honesty. In fact, the Greek translation has the word, instead of having sin, it has en ptocheia, which means it changes the Hebrew word from avoni to sin to onyi. Kashal ba'onyi, I am failing because of my suffering. Now, I'm not saying that the Greek has the right text. And in fact, the Greek translators who were Jewish may have been bothered by the ill-fitting avon, mention of sin, and they made changes to smooth things out. That's something that the Greek translators really do. When there's a problem in the text, they are often likely to change the text to make it look smoother. But either way here, the reason why the Greek is doing that is because it's a little difficult here. The psalm really, except for this one little space, is really not focusing on sin. It's really focusing on the righteousness of the singer. One would use this psalm not when one feels one is sinned but wants to be saved, but when one is feeling righteous and therefore God should do the right thing as well. The psalmist now, getting back to the psalm, the psalmist now states what's become of him in specific terms. He's been turned into a social leper. Mikol tzorarai hayiti cherpa V'lish chenai ma'od ufachad limyuda'ai ro'ai b'chutz nadadu mimeni. I have become disgraced because all of my enemies, i.e. the liars from above, and even more so disgraced in front of my neighbors. I'm a fear to my relatives, i.e. they fear being associated with me. Those who see me outside turn away from me. Nishkachti kemet milev, hayiti kechli oved. Like the dead, I have become forgotten. I am like a forgotten, like a lost utensil. This is not only an accusation actually against those who caused this situation, those liars, those shomrim avlei shav, but I think it's also an accusation to the friends and neighbors and even relatives who are quick to say, David? David who? When the going gets tough. This is the kind of situation where people quickly forget you when you're no longer popular or liked it's like Casey at the bat. They don't remember you when you're swinging and striking out. They only remember when you're hitting home runs. And I think this comes together with the word hashomrim havle shav. Shav are lies, but hevel is vapor which quickly disappears and leaves no trace. The idea being it's not only people who lie, but people who don't remember the truth very long. Kishamati, continuing on with the tila, kishamati dibat rabim magor misaviv, bihivazidam yachad alai lakachat nafshi zamamu. Indeed, I hear ill speech, like Lashon Hara, dibat rabim, of heralds of fear all around, magur misaviv, as they gang up against me, pardon my colloquial translation of bihi vazdam yachad alai, to take my life, so they have plotted. Note that the word rabim is often used for enemies, for example, in Tila Gimel in Psalm 3 and many other places as well. And now we get to the second va'ani, which is this is what they do? These terrible liars, these Lashon Haranists, these people who plot against me. Va'ani! This is a second attempt at confidence in God. First we had confidence in God, but then we fell back to Choneni Hashem. Things are so bad, and now we're trying to break out a second time into confidence. But I, va'ani alecha batachti Adonai, amarti Elohai ata. But I put my trust in you, Lord. I say, you are my God. And now that this trust and faith has been established, the poet turns to pray and petition for salvation. Biyadcha itotai. This is a further affirmation of faith. And the second time that David is saying that he puts himself in God's hand. Up above we had biyadcha afkidruchi, and now we have biyadcha itotai. My future is in your hands. Itotai, from meaning my times, my future times. Hatsileni miyad oivai umeiro defai. Save me from my enemies and from those who chase after me. Notice that the hand of God is being compared to the hands of my enemies. In this kind of beautiful, poetic juxtaposition. Ha'ira panecha l'avdecha hoshieni b'chasdecha. There's the word chesed again. Show favor to your servant. Literally, cause the light of your face to shine on me. Of course, a metaphor. Note that know the affirmation that he, David, is a loyal servant, and I want to repeat that over and over. Ha'ir panecha al avdecha, I am your true servant. Save me as you are faithful. Hoshieni b'chasdecha. That is, I am faithful, so you must be too. That's how I read this psalm. How very audacious to the way I'm reading it, and how very personal, and honestly, how very Jewish. I remember Rav Amital, the Rosh Yeshiva of Gush Etzion, when I was there, used to talk about Man Noaz, the tefillah of Yom Kippur. And if we didn't have from our forefathers that you could sometimes stand up and say, God, you promised to save me. It's only just that you saved me. We wouldn't be able to do it. But thank God we can. And thank God we have this very personal and intimate relationship with God. And now we turn from a petition that God do the right thing, not only by saving his servants, but by giving his enemies and unfaithful what they deserve. That is very much in Tehillim, you have two sides of the coin. Not only do you need to save me, but you need to put enemies down. Adonai al evosha ki kiraticha yevoshu rishaim yidmush lishol. Lord, don't let me be shamed or disappointed perhaps because I called to you. Here I translate ki as because. That is, because I have this relationship to you, because I trust you, I always have and I always will, don't let me be shamed by letting the enemies have their way. Rather, Yevoshu Rasha'im, let the wicked, the unrighteous be shamed. Let them be silenced in Sha'ol. Sha'ol is a place after death. It can mean simply the grave, or it can have metaphysical connotations, or it could be a metaphor that David is using, i.e. silence them as if they were 6 feet under. And the reason for their deserved silencing gets back to the core argument. Te'alam nasifte sheker, hadovrot al tzadik atak begavav avuz. Silence these lips of lies. That doesn't sound so good in English. The Hebrew siftei sheker sounds much better. That speak brutally against the righteous with arrogance and contempt. And now we move to confidence, because I'm confident that God, the singer David, or us, when we use David's poem to speak our problems, we move to confidence. The author is so sure, we are so sure now that God will do the right and righteous thing, that we move to past tense. Marav tuvcha asher tzafanta li reyecha, pa'alta lachosim bach negev ne'adam. Oh, how great is the good that you have stored away for those who fear you, the good that you have done for those who rely on you for protection against people, neged bnei adam, referring to these liars and the faithless. Or perhaps neged bnei adam means to the eyes of everybody. That is, you are going to save me in front of everybody, and everybody will be able to see. And again, why do I translate this, what's clearly past tense, as what I refer to as confidence test, something that I'm sure is so going to happen that I consider it already done? Because again, in the next verse, it clearly hasn't happened yet. Tastirein b'seiter panecha, in the future tense, hide them in the safety of your face, me ruchsei ish, titzpenein besuka, me riv lishonot. Hide them in the safety of your face. And this is a beautiful comparison with the light and dark contrast. Before we had shine the lightness of your face in verse 17 above, and now we have hide them in the shadows of your face, a beautiful comparison. From the faithlessness of man, me ruchsei ish, titzpenein besuka, shelter them in a pavilion from the contentious tongues, meriv lishonot. I'm guessing on the word ruchsei ish, a reches is an outcropping or a high outcropping of stones and cliffs. It's harsh and it's rocky and sort of uneven. It's used in contrast or in comparison with the word reev here, meaning fights and contention. So faithlessness for the word ruchsei ish seems pretty good in context. However, you could look at various mefarshim, but the idea is something unpleasant and unfair. Note the phrase titzpenei besuko is from our famous Psalm 29 of David, which we read twice daily from the month of Elul until Rosh Hashanah, and right through the Sukkot holiday, L'David Adonai Orivishi. The Sukkah brings to images God's temple, also the rock on Har Sinai, on Mount Sinai, where Moshe and Eliyahu protected themselves, and it refers to God's protection in general. And now we go from confidence to super confidence. Baruch Adonai, that is, I've stoked myself up so much, and I know that God's going to save me. Baruch Adonai kifli chasto li bi'ir matzor. Blessed is God because he was wondrously faithful. There's the word chesed, faithful to me in the city under siege. And I translated this much differently at the beginning of the shiur, but hifli can mean not only separated, as I translate before, but it could be wondrous, a pele. And they're both connected, the idea of something wondrous being something separated from the natural. And chesed, again, here is, I think, related to emet in this tehillah. Unfortunately, we're now moving to something a little strange. After the super confidence where I bless God, where the true previous two va'anis, but me, contrasted others' faithlessness with David's faithfulness, here the contrast is against David's own confidence, because even the best of confidence is subject to moments of doubt and pain which need to be recognized and countered. Va'ani amarti b'chovsi nigrazdi mineged einecha. Now I said in my alarm, you have cut me away from your sight. Note that this is almost a direct quote from Yonah, Nigrazdi opposed to Nigzarti, and Ani Amarti B'chovzi we have in the Halel Tehillim. And when Yonah is recalling his near-death experience, he says, Ani Amarti, I'm sorry, Nigzarti Mineged Einecha. Now the word is there, Nigzarti, and here it's Nigrazdi, but both mean cut off. A garzen is an axe. Words sometimes have their letters swapped around without changing to the meaning. For instance, kesev and keves are the same thing in Hebrew, chug and chaveh. Yoshua was buried in, one time it says he was buried in Timnat Cheres, another time in Timnat Serach. So really when you have this switch of letters, letters, it doesn't necessarily have a switch of meaning. In English, I could give an example of spaghetti and peschetti. One may be more correct, but as language develops, they both become equally viable. However, David continues. So David is shocked and he says, but now he's trying to pull himself back. He admits that things are still tough and the confidence can't completely give him hope. He's still shaken up, but he's trying to overcome it. David continues, I pulled myself together and recognized the truth. But really, you heard my calls for mercy when I prayed to you. Or in the present tense, I'm confident that you will hear my calls for mercy as I pray to you. Therefore, because of the super confidence, David calls to his audience, who may be in the same boat as he is. Ehevu et Adonai kol chasidav. There's the word chesed again. Emunim, and there's the word emunim of trust and faithfulness. Emunim no tser Adonai umushalim al yeter osei gava. Love God, all those who put faith in him. There's that word again. Chesed, God guards the faithfulness, the truth, the reliability, the emunim, which is related, of course, emunah is related to the word emet. And in contrast, umshalem, he pays back extra, al yeter, against those who behave arrogantly. Lying and dishonesty are the core of arrogance and a rejection of the fact that God pays attention to what people say. And David is saying, I know that people who speak the truth will be rewarded and guarded, and people who lie and use words not only frivolously, but with egotism and a sense of haughtiness, those people will be put down by God. Now I would like to say that David has been saved in these last few verses. I would love to say that the Tehillim ends off with complete confidence and hope. He says, Shamata, you have heard and acted. But in the next pasuk, we have a Chazak and the Amatz. And Chazak and Amatz are classic boosting of morale for the troubles that still lie ahead, and of which absolute confidence that is one really requires still complete confidence that God will be faithful and reliable. There's still work to be done. Chizku, v'yameitz levavchem, kol ha'miyachlim l'adunai. Be strong, all of you, and he, God, will give you courage, you who wait and hope for the Lord.